Welcome to Big Broadway Energy, the podcast with your host, Stephen Reardon. That's me. Thank you for being here, podcast listener. That's you. Here at Big Broadway Energy, we talk theater, we talk acting, we talk music, craft, we talk the biz of the boards. And I can't do it by myself. Wait, no, that's a lie. I could do it by myself. I often do it by myself. But today, I'm so excited. We have, dare I say, local theater royalty in the studio. He's one of the best darn actors around. You've seen him for many years, gracing the stages of American Stage, Job Site, Stageworks, and most often, Free Fall, which is right down the street. He is a resident Renaissance man. He is multi-talented Matthew McGee. Hey, Matthew.
Oh my God, Stephen, I love that. I love when you go into the intro. You do have that big Broadway energy.
I really try, although it's such a dorky thing.
No, I love it. I think it's a great title. Love the show, so I'm so happy to be
here. Oh my gosh, that makes me so happy. You're doing the podcast rounds right now, talking about your newest show, which is called Foreclosure, a brand new madcap comedy playing at Free Fall. And I haven't seen it yet. Bad podcaster. I know. But I'm going to see it. I've heard such wonderful things. And I want to give a synopsis. But before I do that and let you sort of talk about it, the reviews are coming in. And I read a couple of highlights from the reviews. I just need to put them out because they made me laugh out loud. Blake Santori of New Play Reviewer says, quote, "I have died of laughter, and I'm writing this from beyond the grave," unquote.
That's a great one.
And then he also says, let's get straight to it then. Someone transfer Foreclosure to Broadway and give Benitez, which is the playwright Hannah Benitez, the Tony, end quote. I mean, high praise indeed.
Really, really, very much so. We were very happy. You know, we've been, you and I were talking earlier before we went on the air about podcasts and how important they are for theater marketing these days. Cool. We've been inviting bloggers and things to come and cover because these days, no, and this is not an insult or anything, it's just the way things work, but you know, the Tampa Bay Times rarely does a review for a play.
Sure.
So we've been inviting people who blog or people who are, or podcast hosts and people to help us get the word out about things. So when we saw that, we were very grateful because we really do think that reviewer really got it. And we've had a few other ones come out that are so great and people are having a good time. And the one word that keeps coming out is fun.
Yeah.
And
what's that?
I know, right? And sometimes in the theater, what is that?
Sure,
right?
Of course.
Sometimes theater will spend most of its time. A lot of times theaters have the best intentions when they program shows, but a lot of times they program the shows that they want to see, not necessarily what audiences want to see. And what's interesting is, even though it's a world premiere play, we had no idea how it would work or how it would land. Mm-hmm. Foreclosure is a kind of play that people want to see, audiences want to see, and they're having fun and they're laughing a lot. And I think that's great. I mean, that's something that I really appreciate.
It's so needed right now. We all know it. We don't have to go super crazy political about it, but it's true, like especially in Florida. And the themes of this show are so relevant, now more than ever in Florida, now more than ever. But I've been hearing that although there are some polarizing themes in the play, which is great, I kind of love polarizing theater, and it can be funny and still polarizing,
sure,
right? Audiences that either lean left or right are getting something out of this show. And like you said, it's about fun and laughter.
That's right. And they're all sitting together in the same room, watching the same thing and enjoying it together. Mm-hmm. That is something we talked about very early on as Free Fall was coming back from the pandemic. I mean, a lot of people remember us with The Falling Man and the unexpected, daring, authentic, the three-word tagline.
Yep.
And then all of a sudden, coming back from the pandemic, our artistic director, Eric Davis, said, look, we've got to get people back in the habit of going to theater again. They have not been going. And he was worried that they didn't miss it. So suddenly, Free Fall got Chad Mize to create this very bouncy new orange and blue logo. We had a marketing firm come in and say orange and blue are good colors. People like that.
Yeah.
And also we say simply escape a while. That's the new tagline.
Oh, I love that.
And that's
that.
Very different from what people have known about Free Fall over the years. But he said we had to get them back in the door. And that's kind of what we've been trying to do for a while now.
I was going to say, Free Fall is one of those places that has been around, I mean, since like 2008 or something. It's been around for a really long time, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I always appreciate theater companies that run the gamut when it comes to programming. And to your point, Eric is well known for creating, recreating things that maybe he saw on Broadway or he brings in the very beginning, he brought really shows that were pushing the envelope on purpose because I think he knew that's what he wanted, the Free Fall audience to enjoy and experience.
Yeah.
But I really love it when they give new playwrights an opportunity, when they give new plays an opportunity. Eric obviously is a playwright and puts his own things on stage. Yeah. Like, I really love that they're evolving with the theater audience because to your point, without that, you lose them.
Yeah, and I think he also wanted, I think from the beginning, we would always do a world premiere, but sometimes it seems like we have at least even like two in the season, you know? So we don't always push them as world premieres much because we always think that people go, yeah.
It's not ready for me yet.
Where is it going? Yeah, you know, is it going to be good, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, back to what we were talking about, conservatives come see the show. I have some friends. I mean, I have friends from all walks of life, and my conservative friends see the show, and they go, oh, my God, those people in that show are so wacky. Aren't liberals crazy? And then people who are on the left see the show and go, oh, it's so nice to laugh, and that Michael Davenport character, he reminds me of you-know-who, and, oh, boy, it was fun to watch him get skewered. And I thought, oh, my God, we've hit the jackpot, because they both saw it and felt positively about it.
They went on the journey with you.
Yes, and everything now is so partisan. So to see everyone coming to the theater and enjoying something together, that was one of the big things Eric said we needed to do coming out of the pandemic. So we feel very good about how foreclosure is going.
That's so true because, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, I think, as we all have in the political climate for the last, I don't know, 6 or 7 years. Like, when I was growing up, I mean, I'm a Catholic family. I grew up a very conservative Christian in this neighborhood in St. Petersburg. And, you know, we always sort of saw discord, but you could leave it outside the door when you were doing an event or a family event, or like it wasn't always on top of mind. And I think that is what's different now. Everyone's ready to fight. And it's, I love when we're able to put it down in the car, leave it in the car, go see a play, and really enjoy each other for the first time, it seems like, in a long time.
Sure. And you have to understand, too, we're in Florida. So half of your audience, maybe even more, it just depends, could be conservative. You don't want to start the show already alienating
pissing
half
them off
of the audience. Yeah, already pissing them off, which I think is a much better description. Yeah. So, you know, it's important for us to you know, audience development is at the key of what we're trying to do, because there's still people out there. Free Fall's been around maybe 15, 16 years. There's still people who don't know it.
But they drive right by it. They're like, that's an old church.
I never even knew that's what it was. Or there's people, I was looking at even like American Stage in the Park, which is like, you know, an institution. The Park Show is an institution. I did it for years. I will look at the comments on a post from like Tampa Bay Times and people go, where is the park? What is American Stage? You're like 45 years late. I mean, you know, people think theater in this area and they just automatically go, Straz.
Yeah, that's it.
And
right.
I went to the Straz the other night and saw Lion King and had dinner at Maestro's, and I went, well, of course they think the Straz. This is a pretty great experience, stem to stern. I was able to get food see the show all in one place. Mm. So it's interesting. You really have to work harder to get people in the mindset of wanting to know about theater, go to theater, and are interested in it. And that's why shows like yours that kind of celebrate not only just the art form of it, but the people who make it, that's important.
Yeah, I agree. And you and Eric Davis, who we already mentioned is the artistic director over at Free Fall, are really like a partnership over there. Yeah. I mean, you've shared the stage with him so many times. He's directed you so many times. How do you keep a relationship like that fresh?
You know, it's very interesting. I you know, when Free Fall started, I was not part of the founding group of people who founded it. In fact, I think my job at the time was being done by Kevin Lane, who, you know, of the Rothman family, you know, who owned Canes, and he's still a great, you know, supporter of the theater, and he was on the board for a while, and he still does so much for us. He's the best. But I kind of jumped in and didn't really know. I had been the artistic director at Show Palace Dinner Theater in Hudson, Florida
for
over a decade. And then I went into what they called the outreach and marketing position and communications, and I kind of had to learn on the fly how to do it. But I used a lot of the ideas that I had at Show Palace, where I felt like, you know, look, a lot of people don't know that this dinner theater exists, that it's right on US 19. So I tried to make sure that if people wanted to talk with me about the show, if retirement communities ask, can Matt come and tell us about the season, I would never say no. I would go to everything. And I did that with Free Fall too, just to try to get the name out there, to get the word out. And so Eric and I, he had always known me as an actor, but he didn't know I did that too. So I began to work very closely with him, because at the beginning, now we have Julia Ruffino, who works on all of our graphics and works on marketing with me. But at the beginning, marketing was really me and Eric. Mm-hmm. We'd have an idea. I would talk about something. I wrote all the press releases. I'd write all the copy. And Eric would create the graphic design, I mean, and be the artistic director and everything else he does, because he does so many things. So we just were in the trenches. And I think that's what built up a great friendship, along with a partnership, in terms of just, you know, we really... That's why I wanted to do. I really pushed the Sherlock Holmes shows.
They were so great.
Because in many ways, we are kind of like Holmes and Watson in a way.
I love it.
And I I knew those would do well because we have that dynamic, and it would be this bit of art imitating life. And there was a moment when we did Moriarty where Eric would sometimes get choked up because he would say, as Sherlock Holmes to Watson, "You have been with me since the very beginning." Mm. And that would be unique for the audience, because I even think some of the audience members who were in the know were like, "Wait a minute, that's very meta what's happening right now."
It's so true. I mean, it's so funny you say that, because I think subconsciously I felt the same way when I saw those shows.
A lot of people did. I think that's why they liked them, I guess. You know, I mean, of course, look, I mean, those two characters are
timeless,
beloved.
Ageless.
They're in our culture. Yeah. But I knew that there would be a certain amount of that people would like to see. So, yes, I really consider Eric one of my dearest friends, but also he is my boss and he is the creative leader at Freefall. I mean, everything we do kind of stems from his ideas. Mm. But I would say a lot of people don't know about Eric is how collaborative he is with people. He likes to hear from people. He likes to hear your ideas. When we come up with seasons, he has his own things he'd like to do. But he also goes, "What else do you think? What else can we do?" So, yeah, I think what's happened at Freefall in many ways is we've almost become like a rep company of actors. There are certain actors you'll see all the time. It's just easier sometimes. And then we supplement with out-of-town guests, which we love having as well. But we always say that it's kind of like world-class theater that's made right in St. Pete. I mean, Eric is a longtime artistic director. When you look at the artistic directors in town now, there's been some turnover. But, you know, Eric Davis and David Jenkins at JobSite, they've been there since the beginning.
From day one, yeah.
So
it's true.
So that there is something unique about that and something exciting about that. And I think if he were in here to do the interview, he'd say there's something exhausting about that as well.
Well, you know what's funny, though, Matthew, is that you're sort of yin and yang, right? I mean, I've met Eric on a couple of occasions. I've auditioned for him a couple of times.
Sure.
I've met him, you know, sort of publicly. But he's an introverted guy.
He is.
It's really hard to get him out there to A, endorse himself or Freefall, and B, sort of like just be a gregarious person.
Absolutely.
Whereas you are someone, I think audiences see your name and they know what they're going to get, whether you're on stage or off.
And I think that was part of the plan when they were trying to replace whatever that, you know, the founders of Freefall were trying to replace that role.
Mm.
And they said, "Well, look, Matthew McGee can go out. He can go out to, he can do interviews. He can do all this stuff." You know, Eric gets kind of sometimes he gets a reputation for being aloof, but that is not the case. Much of the time, Eric is, like you said, social situations aren't always his favorite thing
and
to be a part of.
That happens to a lot of
artists,
you know?
Yeah. And so what he really prefers doing is creating the work. That's what he loves the most. And he does like to talk about it from time to time, but he isn't always gregarious and wanting to just be everywhere. But you know what's funny? I used to be much more about that than even I am now, right? Like, as I've gotten older, it's harder for me to be everywhere too, like I used to be.
Sure, of course. I mean, everybody evolves that way, but
yeah.
I'm so glad that you are really such a presence at Freefall, because for myself, who has seen many shows there, I always sort of let people know, like, you got to go check out Freefall. Like, it's something very special.
And you know what Eric always says? He goes, "Matt, you're the cruise director here," which is very funny. And then he calls Michael our minister of music, Michael Raven.
Oh my God, that's
so
great.
And so that actually is pretty good description,
yeah,
in a weird way.
I love that.
I mean, in a funny way.
We've spoken, you've spoken about your influences for your character in Foreclosure on other shows like the Rip Taylor, Dom DeLuise vibe, which I think that's so accurate, just knowing how you are on stage, not in the show, but just in general. I'd love to hear a little bit more about your kind of journey to sort of how you work. Like, I'm Oprah right now, and we are in the woods for an inspirational chat. So, no, like, tell me, how did you get into this business? How did you find your voice on stage?
Oh, sure. You know, I think it took me a while, actually. You know, I grew up in a very small southern town. I was, you know, I mean, we're talking small, very religious town. I was sort of an oddball. I never found myself feeling unpopular in my town because I would perform in my local community theater.
Love
and I
it.
Would sing and do events. And, you know, and I liked performing for people, but I didn't really fit in my small town. So
sure.
As soon as I was able to get out, I did, you know, I needed to go to school in state. So I went to a place called Valdosta State University, and they had a summer theater program, the Jekyll Island Musical Theater Festival, summer theater outdoors. In Georgia, South
Ooh.
Georgia, okay?
Yeah.
So heat is never a problem for anymore after doing Fiddler on the Roof at Jekyll Island Musical Theater Festival in July in Georgia.
Yeah.
But one of the best things about that program is so many young people these days go to acting programs, and they may or may not ever get a chance to be on stage. Mm. And at Valdosta State University, the size of the group was right. The professors there were all about the doing theater, but also being in the trenches and producing theater yourselves, that I was always busy. I was always in shows, and I learned so much. But after I graduated, I went to New York in about 20, I think this is a very interesting story. I think I arrived in New York to live in New York after kind of working out of a suitcase for a couple years after I graduated and living in Atlanta for a short period of time. September 9th, 2001.
Mm.
So right when I got to New York.
That was when you landed in New York?
That's when I got there. Wow. And then a couple days later, September 11th happened. And the entire, just New York changed. Well, we all changed. The world changed, but New York really did.
Yeah, it did.
And it wasn't that place that I was looking for all these opportunities. Now, I did find some, but they took me out of town because New York at the time was just a very different place. Mm. And then I got in an off-Broadway show called Blessing in Disguise, and I was in drag. And I had only done very little drag in my college days, because I was in, you know, I was in South Georgia. I mean, even though they liked it, but still, I was in South Georgia, you know. So I started doing a little bit of drag here and there, and but I just couldn't find my footing. At the age I was in New York at the time I was, I just was not getting the kind of callbacks or getting the kind of agent I needed. Hmm. Things just weren't going well because they didn't quite know what to do with me. I had a great theater teacher in college who said, when you're 50... and you're in your late 40s, early 50s, you will start to play the roles you were always supposed to play. But I kept thinking to myself, you're telling me this, I'm like 19 years
yeah,
old.
Thanks.
What
I'll
am I going
to
do?
Go back to my house for 30 years.
Right. So what was I going to do, you know? And so I didn't really know. And I just, I had like three great shots of Broadway shows where I felt like I was really close and it never happened. Mm. And so I began to work out of town. And I ended up booking a job in Florida in, I think, 2001. I worked at the Show Palace, and then I went and worked at the, you know, like different theaters all across the country. And then I worked at Walt Disney World for a while. And I liked Florida. I found that there were opportunities there, so I didn't really look back to New York. Mm-hmm. And I still don't to this day. It's very strange. I know that I think I'm a little more marketable now than I even was when I was there the first time. And I also have more confidence. And I think I'm better after just, I mean, with age comes wisdom. But I also think, I mean, that's the toughest thing for actors, isn't it? Mm. The older you get, the better you get. But
for
then you
sure.
can't remember any of your damn lines. It's a struggle. But it was never really on my radar anymore.
Yeah.
And the first time that I ever got into this theater scene here was actually, I did a show at American Stage, but it was one of Gary Brule's Suncoast AIDS Theater Project Prelude to Pride shows, and I played Anna Madrigal in a reading of Tales of the City.
Wow.
The Olympia Dukakis role.
Of course.
Yeah, caftans and everything.
Oh, wow.
And a few people saw me in that, and then I began to appear a lot at American Stage. I mean, at the beginning, I mean, there was a time when Todd Olson was there, and even Goulart, Sophie Goulart, I was probably doing two shows. I was maybe doing like a play at American Stage and then the park. Like I would have two shows there a year.
Yeah, you always had roles in the park that were really iconic too. Like you played Edna, you played Max. Like you,
these great, big, amazing parts.
Yeah,
yeah. And so that's slowed down a little bit for me at American Stage. But Free Fall always stayed busy too. And I was working at the Oslo Rep. And I just said, hey, I don't really need to go anywhere. I'm doing so much here.
That's so true. I'm so glad, Matt, because I think I always try to engage people about the work in Tampa Bay. You know, I mean, we want to be a cultural destination. And to be honest, as someone who works in this area, we are. Mm-hmm. People just don't know it.
Yeah, no, they don't. And, you know, the performing arts doesn't really get the credit it should around here. And a lot of the reason for that is the visual arts is so strong. Mm. And, you know, as Eric Davis, our artistic director, always says, with visual art, you can put it on a wall. You can put the statue out to be displayed for everyone to see. But when a show is over, it's all taken down, put away, or thrown away.
Mm.
And it's just sawdust and glitter.
Yeah, sawdust and glitter. That's the name of his biography?
I'm writing one of my own called I'm Prancing as Fast as I Can. Oh,
that's amazing.
But truthfully, yeah. I mean, that was sort of the road here. And I've loved being here. And I don't do as much as I used to. And part of that is just, you know, it's that show business.
For sure.
Places change. The leadership changes. I don't take any of that personally. And there's a part of me, too, as I've gotten older, that wants to do maybe a little bit less here and there.
And but your reputation precedes yourself, Matt. Like, I'm so glad you're here. Let's talk quickly about foreclosure, because we could talk all day. Tell me in the audience a little bit about what they're going to walk into.
Well, foreclosure is a very funny show. It's a contemporary farce. And I was remembering talking with the playwright Hannah Benitez, who's has some other plays out there, and she's also sold some scripts, you know, and other things.
And you've worked with her.
I worked with
times.
Her for a long time. Yeah. She's been in about 6 free fall shows, but she's with William Morris now. She sold big scripts, she sold ideas, she sold pitches. So it's great that we have her here doing this play. But it is a contemporary farce, and there are not many of those now.
No.
And the idea behind it is that two women in a very small coastal town in Florida called Gulf Palm.
That sounds oddly familiar.
Right? They're a couple, and they run a real estate agency, and it's really floundering, and they have one particular property that everyone is renting and then wanting to get out of their lease because strange things happen there. In the Mortimer Pitts house is basically what is the name of the person who's famous for owning the home.
Okay.
And they're trying everything they can, and they come up with an idea through the help of a wonderful and wily stripper with a heart of gold named Bobby Goucher. They come up with an idea that if they can get it registered as a historic landmark, all their troubles will go away, and they can get funding for the house, and they don't have to keep renting it.
Oh, wow.
But they need to prove that it is paranormal, that it has paranormal activity. And they hire one of Pinellas County's most prolific psychics, clairvoyants, mediums, and paranormal investigators, Camille Chevalier Milk, or as they call him throughout the show, the Wig. And they said he's on all of the bus stations in Pinellas County. So the show has a Tampa Bay vibe. It's very, and it lovingly lampoons a lot of Tampa Bay. But they bring him in to basically prove that the house is haunted, but they have a little bit of a catch. The president of the Gulf Palm Historical Society, who will have to give them their approval, is a recently elected shady politician that doesn't really like gays or lesbians, you know. So,
sure.
So that those aren't his favorite people to be around. So they hatch a plan to pass as straight so that he will sign off on the house. And hilarity ensues.
Oh, my gosh. I mean,
it's Poltergeist meets Birdcage. You know what I mean?
It's and it's an original play that people are just dying in the rolling in the aisles.
There's a moment where something is revealed in Act Two. And I know you've experienced this, Stephen, on stage with particular shows. They don't just laugh at the big reveal. They're screaming. There's like this big like, what? You know?
Yeah.
And that feels incredible that they're that invested. Or when something goes wrong or they know someone's being nefarious in the show, the audience will go, ooh.
Ooh, they're with it. Yeah.
So they're with it.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
Tickets for Foreclosure is at their Free Fall Theater Company, of course, Wednesdays through Saturdays. And they close May 11th.
May
11th. You can go to Free Fall's website.
freefalltheater.com
for tickets. Matthew McGee, you are a gift. Thank you for keeping us laughing.
I'm so happy to be here.
Before we go, I ask everybody what art means to them. I know it's super cheesy, but I'm playing Oprah today. What does art mean to you?
I have to say, I feel very lucky and very blessed, and I know people use that hashtag blessed word a lot.
Mm.
As the world has changed so much over the many years, you know, like, I mean, look, we've had troubles for as long as we can remember.
Amen.
But over the past 10 years, 15 years, it just seems like you know, if you're a young millennial, which I'm not, I'm Gen X proudly, but you look at the newspaper and you're like, oh my God, you want to put it away, you want to turn TV off. I feel very lucky that I have the gift of making people laugh and that I can help people forget their troubles. Yes, when I hear the word art, and I do consider myself an artist for sure, but I don't press that as much as I know that I can bring people enjoyment and help them forget their troubles for a couple of hours. I think it is a gift, and it is not one I take lightly. I use it with a great deal of responsibility. I truly believe that as an entertainer, I am here to unite people and not divide them. And so it's important to me to help people get away for just a little while, even if it's just for a couple of hours, from the world and how dark it is at times.
Boy, do you, my friend. Thank you so much for being here. Thank you, dear listener, for joining us on Big Broadway Energy. Listen to the radio show with the same name at 10 p.m. on Sundays, 4 p.m. on Saturdays for the replay. If you or someone you know would like to be a guest on the show, email me, please. I love hearing from you. Big Broadway Energy, all one word, @gmail.com. Until next time, friends, be kind, be curious, keep creating. Bye, everybody.